Right now, the device you are using to listen to this is suffering from a pretty severe case of digital amnesia.
Oh, absolutely. It's a constant cycle of forgetting.
Right. Like, think about it. Every single time your phone or, your computer boots up, it essentially forgets that gravity exists.
Yeah.
It forgets that time moves forward. It forgets that basic math is this fundamental property of reality. It basically forces us, the users and the programmers, to define variables, write loops, and just rebuild the entire logical universe from absolute scratch.
Just to do something as simple as opening an email, which is, I mean, it's a staggering inefficiency when you look at it from a macro perspective.
It really is.
The sources we're exploring for this deep dive actually refer to this as the crisis of infinite regress, because humanity has spent, centuries establishing these rock-solid mathematical and physical truths, yet our daily software completely ignores that accumulated certainty.
And it just chooses to start with a blank canvas,
Yeah.
literally billions of times a day. Okay, so let's unpack this because we have two absolutely incredible sources for today's deep dive that actually propose a way out of this crisis. First, there's this visionary manuscript from the year 2026 called The Anchored Universe.
Written by the ODECCT Collective.
Right. And it outlines a radical new programming language called UniverseLang. And second, we have its companion document, which is, well, it's a really dense, rigorous engineering specification.
Oh, it is heavy on the
Yeah,
physics.
very heavy. It details how this language physically functions at the literal thermodynamic level. So our mission today is to figure out how the system stops discovering answers and starts measuring them.
Which completely rewrites the physical energy limits of computing.
Exactly.
And what's really fascinating here is the paradigm shift. We're moving away from treating computation as just this logical, abstract exercise on a screen.
Like just typing lines of code.
Right. And moving toward treating it as a literal physical thermodynamic event. I mean, these two sources together are trying to build a bridge between high-level philosophical truth and raw hardware-level engineering.
To really wrap our heads around why the authors think standard coding is broken, I want you to imagine driving to the grocery store. Under our current software paradigm, it would be like having to individually rederive the laws of physics, invent thermodynamics, and then build an internal combustion engine from raw iron ore every single time you needed to go buy a carton of milk.
Which is exhausting, just think about.
Right. But UniverseLang, on the other hand, it anchors the laws of physics as a given. The car, the engine, the friction of the road, those are immutable universal truths. The system doesn't waste time calculating them.
It only calculates the tiny specific deviation of you today deciding to grab that milk.
Exactly.
And that framing is essential to understanding the mechanism of the language. But to see how the system actually saves physical energy, we really have to look at what it considers truth with a capital T.
Right, the axiomatic core.
Yeah, the manuscript introduces this concept of the axiomatic core. So in UniverseLang, an anchor is this formal computational object that represents a truth with at least 99.9999% certainty.
So it's the absolute bedrock of reality.
Precisely.
And the sources give some really specific examples of what's inside this anchor library. We're talking about heavy hitters here, things like Zermelo-Fraenkel set theory.
Which is basically the fundamental rule book for how groups of mathematical objects interact.
Right. Or the Schrödinger equation from quantum mechanics, or Einstein's field equations for general relativity. And these aren't just libraries you import, right?
No, not at all. They're permanently fused into the compiler itself.
Wow.
Yeah, they sit at level zero in what the text calls the certainty lattice. In the system's visualization, they're actually colored black. And because they represent pure, unadulterated truth, querying them costs virtually zero computational energy.
Because you aren't calculating anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If the machine needs to know how gravity will affect a falling object, it doesn't run a simulation to calculate Einstein's equations. It simply retrieves the known, exact mathematical solution.
There's a line in the manuscript that really stuck with me. It says, "We are not explorers, we are archaeologists of the eternal."
Oh, that's a great line.
It completely reframes the act of coding. Like, you aren't creating a new logic structure. You're just brushing the dirt off a structure that has always existed.
Right.
But I do have to push back a little here because the real world isn't a perfect, frictionless vacuum.
True.
It's messy, it's chaotic. What happens when things aren't 99.99999% certain? What about that remaining fraction of a percent of unpredictable chaos?
Well, that is where the genius of the system's geometric approach comes in. The text introduces a sublanguage called CAOS slang and the concept of a perturbation field.
Okay.
In this framework, reality is never calculated from scratch. Reality is simply an anchor plus a perturbation. They measure that tiny deviation with a variable called epsilon, which represents the distance from truth.
So just to make sure I'm getting this, if I'm a software program tracking a satellite in orbit, my anchor is Newtonian physics, the bedrock rule of how orbits work.
Correct.
And the perturbation, that epsilon, is just the tiny atmospheric drag or like the random solar radiation pressure that pushes the satellite slightly off its perfect path.
That is precisely how it works. And as long as that epsilon, that chaotic deviation, remains relatively small, the system is highly stable. It operates within what the engineers call the effective radius of convergence.
Okay, but what if it gets bigger?
If the deviation gets a little wild, the system uses control primitives to gently steer the calculation back toward the anchor. But the truly revolutionary mechanism kicks in when the deviation becomes too large to control.
Right. What happens when epsilon blows past that radius? Because I know what happens in standard software today.
It crashes.
Yeah. If a variable goes wildly out of bounds or encounters an impossible state, the program just dies. You get a fatal error, a memory leak, or, you know, the classic blue screen of death.
But UniverseLang handles it completely differently. When the system hits a massive divergence, it triggers something called the collapse operator, and it forcefully shifts into paradox lang.
Okay.
It doesn't view the divergence as a software bug. It accepts it as new, valid data about the physical universe.
Oh, wow.
It essentially realizes, hey, my current anchor isn't big enough to explain reality anymore.
Hmm.
So it enters this meta-reasoning loop to spawn a completely new anchor.
The example they gave in the text for this absolutely blew my mind. They talked about speed.
Yes.
Like, Newtonian physics is a perfect anchor for everyday speeds, cars, airplanes, even satellites. But if an object starts accelerating closer and closer to the speed of light, Newtonian math starts giving wrong answers.
The perturbation, the epsilon, diverges toward infinity.
Right. Standard math breaks down completely. But instead of crashing, paradox slang jumps out, searches through higher dimensional mathematics, and spawns Einstein's special relativity as the new anchor.
Exactly.
The paradox of infinite mass is instantly resolved by just stepping up to a higher dimension of mathematical truth.
It is functioning as a self-healing, self-bootstrapping compiler. It writes a fundamental patch to the anchor library on the fly. And that patch is literally a new theorem of physics.
That is wild.
It is. But to fully grasp how groundbreaking this is, we kind of have to transition away from the high-level philosophy of the manuscript and look at the raw physics in the engineering specification.
Yes, because honestly, a self-correcting universe language sounds like pure science fiction.
It really does.
But that second source grounds all of this in raw thermodynamics. But I'm struggling a bit to connect the software to the hardware here. If I delete a huge video file on my phone right now, my phone doesn't get noticeably hotter in my hand. How does manipulating invisible data physically cost energy?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it all comes down to the Landauer principle.
Okay, the Landauer principle.
Yeah. Proposed by physicist Rolf Landauer in 1961, it states that there is a strict, unavoidable physical minimum energy cost to erasing a single bit of information.
And there's a formula for that, right?
Yes. The formula is K sub B times T times the natural log of 2.
Okay, let me translate that real quick. K sub B is the Boltzmann constant, and T is the physical temperature of the environment. So we are talking about actual, literal heat.
Yes. Think about what a bit is. It's a physical state in a machine. When you erase a bit, when you force a piece of hardware that could be a 1 or a 0 to reset back to a default state, you are decreasing the entropy inside the computer.
Right.
And the laws of thermodynamics dictate that to decrease entropy locally, you have to expel heat into the surrounding environment. Erasing data physically pushes heat out. And standard programming is entirely built on erasing data.
Wait, is it? How so?
Every time a standard program runs an if-else statement, it evaluates a condition.
Right.
If the condition is true, it goes down path A, path B is discarded. The entire history of that unchosen branch is overwritten and erased.
Oh, I see.
The bits are destroyed. Therefore, standard programming constantly incurs that Landauer energy cost. The hardware is physically punished for the software's logical decisions. Physics literally rewards reversible operations where you can run the logic backward because no history was ever destroyed.
So the text is saying that in universe lang, a sloppy algorithm isn't just slow. It is thermodynamically unaffordable.
Exactly.
The machine allocates a strict energy budget for every single operation. If your code burns too much energy, constantly erasing its own history, the machine steps in.
Correct. The runtime actively evaluates how much of your computation is what the authors call belönad, which is a Swedish term they use meaning rewarded.
Rewarded, okay.
Yeah. Irreversible heuristic algorithms, the kind we write today with endless loops and discarded branches, simply cannot avoid the Landauer heat tax. If you exhaust your thermodynamic energy budget, the compiler takes action.
I have to challenge this because it sounds almost draconian.
It is strict.
Like, if I write bad code, the computer physically punishes me by throttling my thermodynamics. How does it even enforce that? Does it just shut my program down?
Well, it doesn't shut it down. It physically degrades the operation.
Hmm.
The compiler forces your operation into a lower priority, higher cost tier. You're penalized by having your computational bandwidth restricted because you're wasting the machine's thermodynamic potential.
That is ruthless.
It is.
But I guess logically it makes perfect sense.
Right.
If erasing a bit creates literal heat, a program with an infinite loop and constantly discarded branches would literally melt the processor if it scaled up infinitely.
Precisely.
So the system has to optimize. Which brings us to how the compiler actually stops you from melting the machine. It organizes all computation into five distinct energy tiers.
Yes. Let's explore the optimization of these tier structures, because the compiler's entire purpose is to continually demote operations down the tiers, pushing them closer to the absolute thermodynamic floor.
Okay, let's start from the top.
Right, or rather the most expensive state. Tier 3 is the irreversible heuristic. This is the worst place for code to be.
Because it erases branches?
Yes. It erases branches, it's heavily taxed by the Landauer limit, and it generates heat. It's meant to be a transient state, a chaotic place you want your code to escape from as quickly as possible.
So once the compiler recognizes a pattern in that chaos, it pushes the code down to tier 2, which is the streaming reversible ODE, which stands for ordinary differential equation.
Correct.
And this is running on an analog logic unit, not a digital one. Which is a huge distinction.
It is a critical distinction. Think of standard digital binary as forcing electricity into tiny rigid boxes. It's either a 1 or a 0. Yeah. Switching those boxes takes energy.
Mm.
An analog logic unit is more like letting a continuous stream of water flow through a specifically shaped pipe. It models continuous time steps. It is reversible, meaning no data is destroyed, which avoids the Landauer tax of erasure.
But there's a catch, right?
Yes. It still incurs linear energy costs.
Yeah.
Because the longer the water flows, the longer the trajectory, the more baseline energy it uses.
That makes sense. So to escape that linear cost, the compiler pushes the operation down to tier 1, the coefficient cached perturbation. The authors talk about building Volterra kernels here, which sounds intimidating.
Yeah.
But it's basically just the system building a highly predictive mathematical mold of the problem.
Exactly. Building that mold, that mathematical table, is incredibly expensive the first time you do it. The first call to a tier 1 operation burns a lot of energy.
Okay.
But once it creates that stored artifact, it has set up the future.
Yeah.
You no longer have to calculate the flow. It just checks the mold.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Because the mold is just a stepping stone to the holy grail of this entire architecture. Tier 0, the compiled truth table. I just want to bask in the elegance of Tier 0 for a moment. Because this is where the system essentially breaks our current understanding of computing.
Explaining how Tier 0 operations achieve the thermodynamic limit for energy efficiency is the absolute core of the engineering specification. A tier zero operation doesn't calculate anything. It only reads from a pre-compiled truth table.
Right. And the mechanism here is brilliant. The readout register is completely decoupled from the computation's history. When you query tier zero, no bits in the input register are overwritten.
None at all.
You aren't processing logic. You're just looking at a static answer through a window.
And because no bits are ever erased, it costs strictly the Landauer floor. Meaning it only expends the microscopic fraction of energy required to physically touch the bits during the read phase.
Wow.
And what's truly revolutionary is that this energy cost is completely independent of the size or complexity of the problem.
That is the mind-bending part. Whether you are looking up the physics of a pebble dropping from a table or simulating the gravitational orbit of an entire galaxy, if that math has been crystallized into Tier 0, the energy cost is identical. It is pure measurement.
It perfectly amortizes over an infinite number of calls. You paid a massive initial energy cost once, in tier 1 or higher, to construct the truth table. But for the rest of eternity, looking up that answer costs the absolute physical minimum.
Incredible.
The operation is born into the highest tier its uncertainty requires, and the compiler's entire existence is dedicated to successively demoting it until it reaches tier 0.
But I have a huge problem with the mechanics of this. How does a piece of chaotic code actually graduate into a pristine tier zero truth?
That's the big question.
Because earlier, we talked about paradox lang spawning entirely new anchors when the math breaks down. And that happens in tier four, the meta search stage.
Right.
Doesn't searching the infinite mathematical universe for a new fundamental law of physics burn a catastrophic amount of energy? Doesn't that totally defeat the purpose of saving a tiny bit of heat in tier zero?
It absolutely would burn an unbounded amount of energy, if not for the strict rules of the promotion protocol. The specification outlines step-by-step how an anchor is promoted, and it uses computer scientist Donald Knuth's concept of amortized analysis, but dressed entirely in thermodynamics.
Okay.
The compiler won't just promote any new, flashy idea to tier zero. The new math must earn its place by proving it will save energy in the long run.
Okay, so amortized analysis. It's basically like buying a $5,000 commercial espresso machine for your kitchen.
Good analogy.
The initial cost is massive. That's your tier four compile work. If you only use it once, it's a terrible investment. But if you use it to make coffee every single day for 10 years, the cost per cup eventually drops to pennies.
Yes.
The compiler is essentially an ultra-strict accountant, making sure you are actually going to use the espresso machine before it allows the system to buy it.
That is a perfect analogy. And the account relies on a three-step protocol. Step one is the Pilgrim Consensus. A candidate anchor must pass six incredibly rigorous physical and mathematical tests to prove it is a universal truth.
Like what?
For example, it must survive Chudnovsky validation.
Which is basically a stress test for infinity, right?
Yeah.
The system forces the new mathematical rule to calculate the digits of pi out to a trillion decimal places.
Yes.
If the new rule causes even a single decimal place to be off, it proves the anchor is unstable and it's instantly rejected.
Precisely. It also has to pass through 10 DCIIT crystalline filters. These act as perfect noise filters to ensure the anchor aligns with actual physical observations, completely stripping away any sensor errors or chaotic data.
So it has to be flawless.
Flawless. Only after it proves it is an absolute immutable truth does it move to step two, the amortization threshold.
Ah, this is where the accountant pulls out the calculator.
Exactly. The system calculates the exact amount of real physical thermodynamic work that was expended to discover this candidate anchor. Let's call that compile work W.
Okay, W.
The math demands that this new anchor must be reused a specific number of times to pay off its thermodynamic debt before it is officially promoted.
And the formula for that is the base 2 logarithm of that compile work, W. Meaning, if it took a massive amount of energy to find the anchor, the universe has to ask that specific question many, many times to justify crystallizing it.
Right.
If a weird physics edge case only happens once, it stays in the temporary cache. It's not worth the permanent upgrade.
Which leads to step 3, the hotness score. The compiler constantly surveys the computational landscape, looking for the hottest spots, the areas where the system is burning the most energy, running repetitive calculations.
So it's looking for the bottlenecks.
Yes. It uses a formula that measures the query frequency of the candidate anchor, multiplies it by its initial compile cost, and divides it by its age.
So it's actively hunting for the math that is both highly expensive and highly requested.
Exactly.
When a candidate anchor finally hits that threshold, the cascade triggers. What was once a heavy heat-generating computation is instantly crystallized into a tier zero lookup table. The bridge is built. The construction took massive energy, but now walking across it is practically free for centuries.
And this isn't a one-time event. This promotion protocol is happening continuously, millions of times a second. The entire system is actively bootstrapping itself.
It's incredible.
It takes the chaotic, expensive unknown of reality, rigorously proves the underlying patterns, and crystallizes them into zero-cost physical laws.
So what does this all mean for you listening to this right now? Why should you care about thermodynamic compilers from a 2026 manuscript? Because it signals the end of debugging as we know it.
Truly.
We are looking at a future where software engineering is no longer about writing endless loops, discarding branches, or patching syntax errors. The future of software is simply finding the edges of our certainty. We feed the machine our messy, chaotic, real-world data, our tiny deviations, and the machine does the rest.
It maps the unknown, proves the math, and crystallizes the chaos into zero-cost physics.
It's beautiful. It is.
But this raises an important question regarding the manifesto's ultimate conclusion. The ODECCT collective refers to the final end state of this system as the singularity of certainty.
Yes, and this is where it gets deeply philosophical. The text suggests that as the Anchor Library continues to grow and learn, the perturbation field, that tiny epsilon of the chaotic unknown, will inevitably shrink towards zero for almost all practical problems.
Which is a wild thought.
What happens if we reach a point where the Anchor Library contains the exact pre-calculated mathematical solution to the state space of the entire universe? At that point, all answers become immediate zero-energy lookups. The machine becomes what they call a crystal ball.
It would be a state of pure reflection of absolute mathematical truth. No calculation required, only frictionless measurement.
But I want to leave you with a profound implication of that idea. Think about it. If a computer can map the exact state of the universe, and it can do so using only the absolute bare minimum baseline of physical energy, and it does it without erasing data or altering a single bit of history. At that point, is it even a computer anymore? Or has it just become a perfect, frictionless mirror of reality itself? If a perfect simulation of reality requires the exact same thermodynamic energy as reality, is it indistinguishable from reality? That's something to mull over until next time.